The CNBC app. Global market news in one place. Customizable sections and personalized alerts. Stocks tracking, interactive charts and market insights all in your hands. Stay connected. Stay informed. Download the CNBC app today.
Hi, you're at the midweek show of Squawkbox with Arabella Gamalia, myself, Steve Sedgwick, and my goodness me, there's a lot of interesting headlines out there, including the Fed chair, Jerome Powell, saying inflation is likely to delay rate cuts this year and cautions against moving too soon.
The recent data have clearly not given us greater confidence and instead indicate that it's likely to take longer than expected to achieve that confidence.
And yet there's divergence, isn't there? Look at that. The ECB are talking to our very own Sarah Eisen, Madame Lagarde, saying it won't wait for the Fed. Christine Lagarde telling Sarah Eisen the central bank will cut rates soon, barring any major shocks.
We have to be data dependent. We have to look at our own work, and we are very, very steady and focused on what we are seeing, and we apply judgment at the end of the day.
The IMF lifting global growth forecasts and raising its outlook for the United States. That comes as the group's first deputy managing director tells CNBC the Fed is right to be cautious.
It makes sense to take a prudent approach, which is to wait and see, make sure that the inflation numbers really are durably moving towards the 2% target. So there is absolutely a reason to wait now and wait for more data to come before starting an easing cycle.
LVMH seeing sales splutter in the first quarter as weaker Chinese demand takes its toll at the world's largest luxury group.
A very good morning to you. Look, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about central bankers and finance ministers in this show. And some of you may, all that tape from the IMF, all that from Washington, D.C., all that Karen's amazing work. Well, why do you want to listen to all those? Because did you see what the markets did over the last 48 hours? That is why we must pay attention to every single word from these Federal Reserve, ECB, Bank of England, you name it, these governors the fact of the matter is that the central bankers are moving markets at the moment. If rates are delayed, market gets a bit of a wobble. Market's coming, market has a bit more strength in it as well. So it's one of the key props of the markets. And so we're going to speak to all of them. And we've got a huge list. And look at this. Gabriel Macalouf, Geeta Gopinath, Carlos Cuerpo from the Spanish Finance Ministry. François Villoy de Gallo, he's moved, isn't he? He's expecting rates pretty soon as well. Centeno, Nagel, Wren. So look, we're going to speak to all of these absolutely pivotal central bankers as well. Nadia Calvino, of course, from the European Investment Bank. And I've been saying it wrong for years, hasn't I? Lissetia Caniago. But you tell me, go on, you give me the right pronunciation.
Lissetia Caniago.
Caniago.
There we go.
And that's Zozi. No, that's KwaZulu, yeah?
No. It's actually not Zulu. It's Bedi.
Bedi.
Sipedi. So it's a P, so Sipedi, which is sort of northern, so yeah.
Go on, northern
part
where?
Northern part of the country, so a place called Pretoria.
Oh, I know Pretoria.
But a little bit further than that, yeah.
Thank God I've got you to do the pronounces now. I've only been getting it wrong for about 5 years, but anyway, thank you for that as well. But anyway, let's get straight into the most important central banker out there. It's the Fed Chair, Jerome Powell, who has warned that it will take longer than expected for the FOMC. I'm going back on it. It's so important. It will take longer than expected for the FOMC to hit its 2% inflation target. I think that has big ramifications for the SEP, for the dot plot. Anyway, as data shows persistent strength in the US economy. March's inflation print came in, as you all know by now, hotter than expected at 3.5%, while the American labor market remains pretty robust. Now, Powell said Fed officials need greater confidence before easing policy.
Inflation, of course, declined quite significantly over the second half of last year, over the whole year, but particularly in the second half. But 12-month core PCE inflation, which is one of the most important things we look at, is estimated to have been little changed in March over February at 2.8%, and the 3 and 6 month measures of inflation are actually above that level. So we've said at the FOMC that we'll need greater confidence that inflation is moving sustainably toward 2%. Before it would be appropriate to ease policy. You know, we took that cautious approach and sought that greater confidence so as not to overreact to the string of low inflation readings that we had in the second half of last year. The recent data have clearly not given us greater confidence and instead indicate that it's likely to take longer than expected to achieve that confidence.
Well, on this side of the Atlantic, they didn't want to go on their own. I can tell you they didn't, because this is the kind of stuff they said before. They'd like to go in tandem with other central banks. But the ECB now is preparing to diverge from the Fed. President Christine Lagarde telling this channel the central bank will cut rates soon, barring any major surprises. Lagarde said the ECB is observing a disinflationary process that is moving towards its target, adding that officials just need to build a little bit more confidence before cutting rates. Well, Sarah Eisen asked the ECB president whether three rate cuts this year is a reasonable expectation.
I wouldn't comment on that, because if you had asked me 2 or 3 months ago, they were expecting more than three. And I think that we are better off from our, you know, central bank perspective, of course, looking at what they anticipate, because they are big boys and they, too many boys, but they're big boys. And they run their models, they observe things, they take risk, they assess, you know, term premium. But we have to be data dependent. We have to look at our own work, and we are very, very steady and focused on what we are seeing, and we apply judgment at the end of the day. What is produced by these numbers and data and model projections have to be taken into account with judgment on the part of the governors.
Lagarde also forecasts when inflation will sustainably hit its 2% target.
We will have a bumpy road. So rates, inflation rates might go down, might go up a little bit, but they will fluctuate around this line that for the moment is going downwards. And as I said, unless we have major shocks that would disrupt that expectations, we should continue to be directionally down to our 2% target, which we believe we will reach sustainably in mid-25.
Karen also spoke to the ECB Governing Council member and Bank of Ireland Governor Gabriel McClough and asked him how much further evidence was required before he'd back a rate cut.
We're pretty close to it now. Before Christmas, I mean, my view was that we had, I mean, I wasn't ready to rule out going further in the hiking cycle. But I think we've now, over the last few weeks, seen enough data to say that we've reached the top of the ladder. And at our last meeting, from my perspective, we've got greater confidence that we can start to reduce the tightening in our monetary policy stance. I would expect, all things equal, that we will see a change in June, unless there's something completely surprising and a shock that we don't expect.
And for more with CNBC's discussion with the ECB President Christine Lagarde, who says that it is extremely attentive to the oil prices, which, of course, have been touching $90 a barrel, although off that today, check out CNBC.com. Arabile, these U.S. markets were a darn sight calmer despite the very mixed data we got yesterday.
Yeah, and it really has been about the central banks, right, as you've been noting, Stephen. They're the ones really moving the market quite significantly. Then just following Jay Powell's comments, then yesterday, we actually saw the market come down considerably for the S&P 500 as well as the Nasdaq. The Dow Jones managing to break a six-day losing streak, then just inching higher, 63 points gained out on that index so far. Then you also still have, of course, the earnings season still in place. So the likes of Morgan Stanley managing to pick up 2.5%. That's because they beat expectations on both the top as well as the bottom line then. And we'll unpack those in terms of numbers a little bit as well. You had Bank of America tumbling 3.5% there as well then yesterday. And they unfortunately did announce a profit and revenue fall. Just really to note out of this earnings picture, of the just less than 10% of S&P 500 companies that have reported so far, 80% or nearly four out of five of those have exceeded estimates, according to FactSet. So early on, it shows some improving signs then for this earnings season as well. So far, we did see Morgan Stanley manage to gain 2.5%, as I noted. Out of the treasuries then, well, the bond market has been moving high because that higher rate story has, of course, affected things. Then Powell's comments yesterday weighing on treasury yields. In fact, you saw the two-year yield inch back above 5% again yesterday, just below that mark as we are right now then, with the 10-year note sitting at 4.66. Onto the dollar crosses then, elevated yields boosting the dollar then, even keeping things at that 34-year high, particularly against the yen is pretty much where we're looking. 154.79 is the high mark that we'd been looking at there. We're just below that right now, but still significantly above. 154 is that key level that we're looking at, and we're still looking for some more movement then across the greenback as central banks continue to make more commentary then. On the Asian market front then, Asian markets a little bit mixed after yesterday's big sell-off that we saw, particularly the Shanghai Composite finding a rebound then, 1.25% better off. Their sentiment may be tempered though by Jay Powell's comments coming through yesterday, the need for rates to perhaps remain a little bit higher there. Exports from Japan when it comes to economic data, well, that rose 7.3% year on year in the month of March, slowing from the 7.8% that we had seen in the previous month then as well, Steve.
Super duper. Thank you very much indeed for that. Let's get to Tim Urbanovitz, who is head of research and investment strategy at Innovator Capital Management. Tim, really good to see you. Look, I think the market's done pretty brilliantly, really. When you consider that at one point they thought they were going to get 150 basis points of cuts this year, that's what the market thought, not what the Fed thought. Now they might only get two at most, if they're lucky, given the most recent data. I know that can turn into three again at some stage, but let's say two for now as well. And it's only 4% off its record high. That's not too shabby, is it?
No, it's not. But Steve, I think we have a market now that is coming to grips with the fact that the most recent inflation prints that we've seen are not just bumps on the way, as Powell described them. We're coming to grips with the fact that this is not just a housing services issue, but we do have inflation that's sticky and it's ingrained across multiple parts of the U.S. economy. And Steve, if you look back to December, we have been in the camp that you are not going to see any rate cuts in 2024. We remain in that camp. We think the evidence is getting stronger. And that's really based on two things. Number one, it's very inconsistent with the path that inflation has taken historically. And number two, it's pretty inconsistent with the strength that we're seeing in the U.S. labor market right now. You still have wage growth that's running at about 4.7%. We still have more work to do on that front. And because of that, we don't think the rate cuts are going to be coming this year. And they think the market needs to come around to that and adjust a little bit.
So, Tim, well done on your call, by the way. I mean, you're looking more and more right as time goes on. But then this begs the eternal question for the market players. Do we, A, buy the market because we're excited about the strength of the U.S. relative to other global economies, and actually that sets a very good environment for U.S. corporates, or B, actually the wall of money that needs to be refinanced over the next couple of years, that's getting closer and closer and a little bit more nerve-wracking for the corporate bond market, which can act as a canary in the coal mine for the equity market. What do? Do we buy it because we like the economy, or do we get nervous because of the debt refinance?
Well, Steve, we have a lot of advisors that we're working with that are remaining in the market via options-based ETF strategies like buffered ETFs or managed floor ETFs as a way to get participation, but really protect against the downside. And right now, I think from an investment strategy standpoint, the number one thing that we are advising clients is that in your portfolio, you have to separate relying on interest rates coming to down to provide that protection in the portfolio. Interest rates are going to remain a key driver of equity prices. So you're not going to get that diversification from bonds. You're not going to get that defensive nature from defensive sectors like utilities, which are very interest rate sensitive. So right now, we think it's really important to make sure that you have that built-in risk management in play as interest rates moving higher can have a big impact on not just the bond side, but also the equity side of the portfolio.
Yeah, Tim, good morning to you. I mean, if rates then are this key driver then, particularly in this equity market space, are we headed for somewhat of a correction, you think, in this market? Yes, we're down a little bit now, 4% from those highs. Does that continue to 10%?
Well, I think the market is at a vulnerable level, right? Valuations are very high. You had the market that had priced in multiple cuts. As we continue to see those cuts not playing out and the first cut continuing to be 3 months out and 3 months out when we get 3 months out from now, I think you are going to see some repricing off those interest rates. But again, the one thing that we don't want to do, we also do not want to fight this AI and tech force that is behind the market. There is a lot of momentum here. So right now, we also see a lot of investors that are maintaining that tech exposure, but also pairing it with other pockets of the market that are trading cheap. We think energy right now is a very strategic play. It's trading at about a 40% discount to the U.S. equity market as a whole. You have oil prices that are high, demand remains high, supply remains constrained. So we see that as a very prudent play, and even barbelling that with your tech exposure to really even things out.
Yeah, very interesting calls as well on that energy play as well. I just wanted to also get, if I may then, Tim, get your expectations for this earnings cycle. Seeing where we are right now, a lot of earnings beats so far. Do you think there could be some cracks in the earnings cycle this time around?
Well, I think you're going to see very strong results overall for a couple reasons. One, the bar is set pretty low. You've had expectations that have come down significantly from last summer. The bar is at about 3% year over year growth. That's going to be a very low hurdle to clear in a quarter where you had economic momentum that was picking up in a very big way. You had inflation that remains sticky, which tends to help margin growth and margin expansion. So we think results are going to be very, very strong. But I wouldn't look to those results to really drive equity prices higher. I think we're in a macro-driven market right now. Geopolitical tensions are going to take precedent. Macroeconomic precedence, the Fed is going to take precedent over those results.
Interesting thoughts. Thank you so much for the time, Tim. Appreciate it this morning. Tim Urbanowicz is the head of research and investment strategy at Innovator Capital Management. Now, coming up on the show, the shine comes off LVMH as the luxury group reports its weakest first quarter sales growth since 2020. We'll bring you more on that next. Plus, the IMF raises its global growth forecast, citing a, quote, surprisingly resilient economy. We'll hear more from the first deputy managing director, Geeta Gopinath. That's later this hour. And stay tuned for more from the IMF spring meetings. Karen caught up with a number of policymakers, including the Ukrainian finance minister. We'll bring you that interview at 7:45 CET.
Ambition to me is about doing better.
I think ambition creates a pathway.
Best advice I can give someone starting off a career is don't have a career, have lots of careers, try loads of different things.
Talk to people and put your ambition out there.
I don't feel that I've hit peak ambition because it's a learning journey.
CNBC is where ambition meets opportunity. What does living ambitiously mean to you? Hear it from our CNBC anchors, reporters, and global business leaders on CNBC.com.
Now, sales at LVMH slumped in the first 3 months of the year, with the luxury group posting its worst first quarter sales growth since 2020. Organic revenue at the company's largest division, that being fashion and leather, grew just 2% compared to 18% in the same period last year. Now, sales fell 6% in Asia ex-Japan. Our organic revenue rose just 2% in both Europe as well as the United States. A few cracks in LVMH's armor here, Charlotte?
Well, yes and no. You remember these numbers come after Kering put out this warning just a few weeks ago, said that they would see revenue down on an organic basis 10% in Q1. And so analysts were really watching those LVMH numbers, because the largest player in that field, on whether we could see the same trends or not. And look, there is still growth. Organic basis, revenue up 3% in Q1. So there is growth. But certainly, we are very far from the post-pandemic boom and all that demand. There's very much what they call the normalization. Now, looking at the details you were saying in the introduction there, in Asia, outside of Japan, demand is down 6%. So look, the comparisons are difficult, because in Q1 last year was just the end of the zero COVID policy in China. Of course, there's a massive rebound in Q1 last year in Asia. But in Japan, sales were up 32%. And they say that's because a lot of Chinese tourists actually traveling in the region and buying in Japan there. Growth that we still see in the US and in Europe, with sales up 2% there as well. So again, it's kind of interesting to look at the details. Fashion and leather is the bit where they missed a little bit expectations. Sales were up just 2%. Of course, fashion and leather as well make the bulk of the growth for LVMH there. For wine and spirits, there the sales were down 12%. They said a destocking effect, the sort of soft Chinese New Year, but they see this stabilizing going forward. When it comes to watches and jewelry, of course, they're still integrating Tiffany's there. And because they target the aspirational consumer, they said they're still working on expanding the brand in the US, but the aspirational consumer in the US is the one that is being most squeezed by inflation. And so that's where they see a little bit of impact there. And really, that's what's interesting when it comes to luxury, because we've seen those prices go higher so aggressively over the past few years. And of course, we see the aspirational buyer being squeezed by inflation, but those higher prices as well. They say in fashion leather, the bulk of growth came from prices. And that's really the question that going forward, have those luxury players gone so high, so fast, that they're losing some of the aspirational buyer. LVMH said they're not worried about that. They said the consumers will be getting used to this new normal when it comes to luxury prices. And to be fair to them, all luxury companies and groups are doing the same and putting those prices higher. So very interesting. We still see growth in luxury, but certainly it's getting much softer going forward. And it's the high end that is doing well. The aspirational buyer is still very much being squeezed.
Fascinating. We'll ask you more questions about it later. I know we've got Arjun waiting, but I just think Hermes trading at 49 times, LVMH trading at 23 times. What a disparity. I don't know where that sits in history, but it looks pretty big to me. Thank you. Lovely to see you. ASML kept its full-year outlook unchanged despite posting weaker-than-expected net sales in the first quarter and a worse-than-expected inflow of new bookings. Well, from one fashion icon to another as well. I am colorblind, but even I am colorblind. I can't differentiate certain colors, but even I can tell that is a bold choice, young. Do you want to tell me what color we're sporting today?
Dusty pink.
Dusty pink.
I don't know.
I can only dream of rocking dusty pink.
Dusty pink or mauve? I think it's mauve.
Dusty pink sounds like an amalgam of two of the greatest female singers out of the United States of all time. But anyway, enough about dusty pink. Tell us all about ASML.
It was another difficult quarter for the company. Net sales were down 21%. It was a miss there. Profit beat, but also down around 37%. Net bookings were down year on year about 4%. So right now, ASML is describing this as a transition period for the company before it believes it's going to see growth in the second half of the year and going into 2025. I think what the company is seeing is sort of slight slowdown on the investment right now before what it believes is going to be a pickup in investments driven by things like AI. And of course, some of those announcements we've seen out of the US with the likes of Samsung and TSMC continuing to invest in new fabs or manufacturing plants over there, they're going to require a lot of this equipment from ASML to produce those advanced chips. And so I think that's what we're seeing in some of the numbers.
You sound moderately downbeat. You're giving us the kind of, you know, the, a bit of wait and see, worse than expected new bookings, etc. And yet when I look at that on the screen, that's great. Thanks, guys. Let's keep that there. You can look at 3 month, 1 year, 5 year, whatever. Yeah. This is a stock that has had a terrific trajectory to the upside. In fact, it's a great example of a European tech stock that trades at US type valuations. It trades at 40 times forward. We talk about moats a lot. This one has got, I think, historically, and then you're going to tell me that I'm wrong, but historically, one of the greatest moats in its niche in semiconductor supply chain of all companies as well. It's maintaining it, yeah?
It's maintaining it. There's no one close yet. And it's still managed.
Not the Chinese, not the Americans, not the Japanese, not the Taiwanese.
And the Japanese, if anyone's going to do it, they're probably the nearer of the companies when you look at some of the innovations happening over there. And this is why I think you're seeing this stock doing so well. But also, it is that hope going into 2025 with this sort of reshoring push, particularly from the US, with these huge commitments from the world's leading chip manufacturers. They have to buy ASML gear. There's no alternative for these companies to buy this equipment. And that's where this moat comes into play. And I think that's why, whilst you're looking at these quarters, they don't look great on paper. A lot of investors are shrugging them off, looking forward into later this year and certainly into next year when there's still hope around AI chip demand, which will require a lot of this ASML gear, which will require the likes of TSMC, Samsung, Intel and others to continue to purchase this very, very expensive, very large and very leading edge equipment.
Superb. We will leave it there. Thank you very much indeed. And again, was that the same colour that Charlotte was wearing then?
It was absolutely similar. Dusty rose or dusty pink.
Did we not get the memo?
We definitely didn't. We got the other memo.
Oh, hang on. Says you switch jackets. You got the same jacket as Charlotte on, yeah?
Yeah.
You never seen the same.
Charlotte's
never seen them both
brighter,
wearing the same jacket.
Brighter colour.
Well.
Which was very
may
nice.
I suggest to Roger that when we have them both on next time, we make sure that there is more than one jacket. There's only one way to do it, and get you both on at the same time.
Exactly, yeah, let's do that.
Rosy pink and dusty pink. Thank you.
Thank you.
Not long now to the big day.
Not long.
Not nervous.
No, I'm all right.
We'll just do a slow build-up, shall we? Week away. Volvo, right, I'll do this. Update on the truck maker's first quarter adjusted operating profit. It's actually beaten expectations. But my goodness me, there's a very diverse market out there. For instance, the Brazilian truck market looking fairly robust, 95,000 units. Net truck order intake in the first quarter. Well, it is interesting, 48,700 versus 60,000 plus a year ago. So you can see a little bit of doubts crept into the truck market on the right-hand side of that screen. Still up 32%, though, over the last 12 months. I will go through this regionally. I think it's important to do so. European truck market, unchanged, fairly robust. But this is interesting. Chinese construction equipment market, which is one of the great kind of X factors of whether this company goes up or down, negative 10% to zero this year. That's the same as their previous guidance, it looks to me here as well. But there might be supply chain disturbances and stoppages going forward. For construction equipment, demand for new machines has come down in many markets, especially in Europe as well. That's fascinating. And weakened Chinese construction equipment market is currently impacting customers and dealers' profitability negatively. So if I had to summarize this on a regional basis, unchanged United States, unchanged Europe, but concern about demand going forward, and China remains very tough still. Adidas, I think it's fascinating, the relationship with the Yeezy trainer situation as well. Dominating a company which you should have had other things dominating as well. But you've seen a bit of good news out of Adidas.
Yeah, certainly have. And what, look, just before I even go to the read, actually, this, you're quite right. It's a company that has actually had brand endorsements as a big part of its business of late, and has worried a little bit more about celebrity endorsements.
They're not
and
all perhaps gone well, have they?
Not all of them have certainly gone well. I mean, you'll take even the likes of Beyonce having been part of those as well.
Wasn't
underwhelming,
it?
Unfortunately.
Yeah, which is extraordinary given the strength the of the behemoth that is
exactly.
Beyonce and her new album, which is going so well and all that.
100%. And this is literally what is happening right now. Adidas hiking its 2024 operating profit forecast, though, to 700 million euros. That's up from 500 million euros after a better-than-expected first quarter. In an unexpected announcement, the German sportswear giant also raised its currency-neutral sales forecast, now seen rising by a mid-to-high single-digit percentage. This after the firm posted its first annual loss in more than 30 years last month.
Thank you for listening to Squawk Box Europe Express.
For more market-moving news, you can head to cnbc.com or join us again on the show with me, Steve Sedgwick, and Karen Cho, weekdays on CNBC.